Who are these boys? Our mind said one boy. Here are two.
Young men, this is Mr. Larry London.
Mr. London, I'm Clark Kellogg.
Our mind said one boy. Here are two.
Well, I realize that, sir. Yes, we are two boys, two. As you quite rightly point out. However, since I'm somewhat new to the area, and this particular parcel was quite bulky. So at the suggestion of Tina.
Ah, the schöne Tina.
The beautiful Tina.
The schöne Tina.
Yes, the beautiful Tina. Again, sir, if there was any misunderstanding, I certainly apologize.
Carmine said one boy? And he has two.
You gotta like this guy.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim, and you've been listening to the opening score for Dirty Harry by the great Lalo Schifrin. He's one of my favorites, the composer of all the Dirty Harry movies, actually, and he also did Cool Hand Luke and the Mission Impossible theme, Cincinnati Kid. Many scores. Enter the Dragon is another one. So I hope you've enjoyed that. And hey, everybody, let me introduce you to the man. He is the personal interview prepper for former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, Teal. How's it going, buddy?
It's going good. Yeah. So that's pretty
a tough gig, buddy.
It's a tough gig. It's a tough gig, but it's basically fiction. Right. So you can just make stuff up. And as long as it sounds good, you're doing all right.
I'm sure he goes off script.
Oh, he goes off script. It's worse than Brando.
He doesn't have an earpiece.
No earpiece. Just making up lines. Didn't even read the script.
Oh, tisk, tisk. All right. So, hey, it's been a little bit. For those of you listening, you may not have noticed any gap in time, but we wanted to make sure that we had some episodes taped. We had them ready to go, but spring break with kids and such came, so we haven't actually taped an episode in a while, and now we're back. And the good news is, with that time off, we've seen some stuff. I've seen way too many things. I don't know about you, but none of it's been in the theater, I'll tell you that. Everything has been on television, watching various streaming things.
Yeah, I have not been to the theater. No. Luckily, Millennial Will went to the theater for me, so I didn't have to.
Yeah, that was great. So I don't know, everybody checks our website, stuffweseen.com, but we've been, you know, putting a few things that are non-podcast related up there, you know, some reviews and other things. And our good old Millennial did a review of Pet Sematary, and I'm very happy that he did, because that meant I didn't have to go see it.
And it actually, his review means I never have to see it.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, Stephen King is really funny. You read his stuff and it really, it feels very cinematic, yeah. And that it should just be a no-brainer to put these things on the screen and have them work out. And time again, they fail.
Yeah. Well, the perfect example for me of this is in The Stand, where Stephen King describes on the page the hand of God reaching down and setting off the nuclear weapon. And now I read that pretty metaphorically and in my imagination and everything. But then when they made The Stand into a TV movie, they have an actual hand reaching down.
Did they?
Yes, they have.
I can't remember. I mean, I was excited to see it, and it was the one with Gary Sinise, isn't it? Right.
Yep. No, they have an actual like glowing blue hand reach down and set off the nuclear weapon.
Was it a blue meanie hand?
It might as well have been. But my point is that they tend to literalize King a little too much.
Yeah, that was not a very good miniseries.
No, but most of, I don't know, what are the best Stephen King movies? That's a whole nother show. We won't get into that right now.
No, I know. But I think the ones that that I like the most are the ones that aren't necessarily his full horror movies.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Or I think for me, one of the best in his sort of horror, I guess, mixes of adaptation, but also like being very true to the book without you feeling like, why did they change all this? Was The Dead Zone by Cronenberg.
Yeah, that's a really good. Yeah, I like that. I haven't seen that. Wow. In years and years, but I remember really liking it.
Yeah, I remember in the 80s when I was really, young and into all his books and had read everything that he ever wrote at that time. I kind of stopped. My wife has read everything he's ever written. But
I have not.
I remember always couldn't wait for the movie to come out and then inevitably being very disappointed.
But The Dead Zone is pretty good. It's not disappointing.
Yeah, The Dead Zone's good. I mean, Stand By Me is a way different type of movie, but I remember that was an important movie for me growing up.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel like anything to do with a Stephen King, which is what I liked. It
was just
coming of age.
Exactly. I guess you could put Shawshank Redemption on that list.
And that has, of course, become a classic of its own right. And actually, I watched it recently with my oldest son, and he really enjoyed it. And it still holds up for me, anyway.
It really has. It's become a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less so is The Green Mile.
Less so The Green Mile, yeah. which is interesting, same director, same writer.
Yeah, I didn't mind it that much. I mean, but it whatever. And then, of course, he also, Darabont did The Mist, which is pretty cool in many ways. So
yeah, it one of the better Stephen King horror ones.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe, all future adaptations should be done by Frank Darabont.
Well, I think people have discussed that before, yeah.
aren't they working, maybe or maybe not, aren't they working on either a new miniseries or limited series on The Stand?
I think I heard something about that, yes.
And then I know that they're also working on that sort of pseudo Shining sequel, Dr. Sleep.
That's right. Yeah, that's won't be good. Movie.
Yeah, it's not a director I know. And it's kind of getting into my whole problem with It.
Yes.
The new movie. I know a lot of people, a lot of millennials enjoyed that. It did very well. But I really felt it was wrong in so many ways.
I really did not like that movie.
No.
But
I can't wait for the sequel.
but I didn't dislike it because of the adaptation, because I haven't read the book, and I haven't seen the TV miniseries either.
Well, yeah, you just didn't like it for pure. It's been.
I just didn't like it as a movie, not because of its adaptation, not because of anything. I just I thought it was like just sequences of talking between action scene or horror scenes that had nothing to do with each other. It's just like a random collection of horror scenes. There's no story. There's no real plot to it.
Well, I mean, again, even with the fact that they took a book that's massive and they're doing two parts, it just didn't feel right. It was like it was trying to cash in on this 80s nostalgia without kind of forgetting all the good stuff that made people nostalgic about the 80s in the first place.
Well, and it didn't even feel like a period piece.
Yeah, I mean, just kids running around on bikes in the summer, that doesn't make it an 80s movie.
No, it doesn't.
I know that people have this fascination, like the whole Stranger Things vibe, but that doesn't feel very 80s to me either.
No, but I'm more forgiving of that for some reason. I just didn't like the It movie. I didn't find it scary. I was bored by it. I thought it was annoying. It had no story. It had no structure.
I put it to you. Will you see the sequel?
Not in the theater.
I will. And of course, what we can do is we can have the millennial write a review.
Yes. You and Will can see this movie. I
will definitely see it.
I will catch up with it at home, maybe. maybe. I didn't even realize they were doing it as a two-parter.
Yeah, it's much different. The book jumps back and forth, so this is kind of a departure. Where
okay.
But anyways, look, we haven't even talked about any of the movies we see. We've been going off on a weird tangent. You know, and I don't believe I've seen any Stephen King story in any fashion in the last few weeks. I've got a lot on my list, but not that.
Yeah, I can tell you I've definitely not seen it.
So do you want to start off? Do you want me to start off? What do you want to do?
Well, you start off. Here's the thing. I don't know if you've seen the movies I've seen, except for one.
I don't
one.
Know if you've
one,
seen the movie I've seen.
There's one movie that we both saw that I know we both saw.
Okay. Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. We'll get to that, too. Well, we'll get to it when you want to get to it.
Yeah, you start off. Let me see. Okay.
I will mention a movie that you talked about on this program a couple of times, and I finally caught up with it on Blu-ray. And I feel you way undersold this movie. You said you really liked it, but I didn't. I don't know. You said I really, really like this movie. It's really, really great. But I really don't believe that you sold it on how amazing it is. And that's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I kept talking about how great it was.
I know, but I just don't think you sold it because it was tremendous because it really did transcend an animated movie.
Yes.
I thought it was really a good adaptation of a comic book.
Well, it really feels like a comic book.
Yeah, way more than, you know, say the comic book live action movies that come out.
Right.
And it was just so entertaining and enjoyable. It was just candy for the eyes, too. I mean, visually, it was a knockout.
Visually, it's amazing. It's unlike any other animated film. And it's so joyful and meaningful, too. I mean, I feel like the story actually adds up to something that's, I don't know, maybe it's typical kid movie kind of pablum.
Well, I found out that, like, I don't even read comic books, but, yeah. I mean, this is well-versed in the comics.
Right. Okay.
In a way that I just wouldn't have known until I read about the end. Even, I don't know, did you watch to the past the end credits?
Yes.
And there's that little extra scene?
Yes.
So that works on many levels. It was very funny. I really enjoyed it. But apparently, there's a lot of little things about the person who has to, you know, the Spider-Man that has to go to the 60s version.
Right.
That is the future. And it's actually a comic of a future version of Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's way deep for me. But I appreciate that there are people that they read all this stuff and they put together this, you know, fantastic movie. And it's really something that even if you don't like comic books, which I'm not a big super fan of those, I had a great time.
Yeah, it's a really entertaining movie. It's just, yeah, it's like I said, so full of joy. My kids loved it. My daughters who prefer movies with female leads really got into this Miles character. Miles Morales? Yeah.
Look at you with the memory.
With a memory. I can't I remember a character name. Wow.
That's it. You've talked about it. I've talked about it.
Yeah, but
it's great.
But I'm sorry if I undersold it. I didn't mean to.
Well, I mean, you should have been jumping around saying, you need to see this movie. Because then I might have seen it in the theater while I was still out. Because now I'm like regretting that I didn't see it in the theater because it was so good.
Yeah. Okay, well, next.
Because you know me, I really like to see films in the theater.
I know.
And that experience. And I really, and actually, I having watched this movie, this is one that I think would have been fantastic. I've used that movie, that term 10 times already, is in 3D. I think this would have been a wild 3D movie.
Oh, I think did it show in 3D?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yes. Yeah, it would have been great in 3D.
Okay, so there's one I saw. Do you want me to go continue or do you want to go?
Okay, I'll go.
Okay.
Okay, I saw a movie called Detour.
It's a short movie, and like I've been doing a lot with the Criterion Collection since it came back, is I sample a lot of films, and then I don't sit there and watch the whole thing, and I watch them in chunks. And Detour, I've watched exactly one half of it, and I have a half to go.
Oh, okay. Well, the second half is a lot better.
Oh, because it's hilarious. I mean, it is the funniest, cheesiest pot boiler done on the shoestringiest of budgets, but I'm enjoying it for the camp purposes alone.
It has this, so this is from 1945. It was shot in 6 days.
And it feels like it. And it feels like they're using the same diner set like 10 times.
They use the same diner set. There's a lot of stuff in the front seat of a car.
Oh, the rear or front projection is the worst project. I mean, it's hilarious.
Yeah, but clearly they could save time by just spending an entire day of shooting in the car with different rear projections.
Oh. It is really funny. But there's like an enjoyment to the fact. Like, I'm not watching going like, how could anybody have watched it? Like, I get it. It was 1945.
Yeah, and I don't know how successful it was then, but it's picked up sort of a cult following.
I can see why, because it is just, whether intentional or not intentional, it is hilarious.
Well, there's another reason it's picked up a cult following, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to give away the ending of the movie for you.
No. Can't you do it without telling me what happens? Okay. Not that I really care too much.
Okay.
But
I won't. I don't know where you are in the movie, though.
The guy died. And okay. Then he has that great narration where yes. He's basically saying, well, I could wait for the cops, but they wouldn't believe me. So I'm going to rob him and take his clothes and be him.
Okay. So
and then he's right at the point where he's going to pick up the female hitchhiker.
Because,
why not?
Okay. So you're right at the point where the movie takes off.
Okay. So it's like great. I mean, I love a movie. It's only an hour and 10 minutes.
It's an hour perfect. And 10 minutes. So I was with the movie up until the point you're at. And then this woman comes in. And her performance is unlike anything I've ever seen.
Oh, God. I can't wait.
It is an astounding performance. And I was filled with glee watching her.
Oh, good.
So one of the reasons this has become sort of a cult film and one of the reasons people follow it is exactly what you just talked about was his voiceover.
Oh, it's amazing.
And his voiceover during that scene and a few other scenes make people question whether what we're seeing is real or if it's just his voiceover that's twisting.
You know what? It's amazing you're saying that because literally he's saying these things and I'm like, well, okay, did this guy just keel over or is this, you had said something to me offline a few days ago about the questionable narrator.
Yeah.
And this could be, and again, I haven't seen the end, but that's where I'm feeling like. I'm feeling like, he's trying to justify that cops wouldn't believe that this guy's just dead and he's on the ground and that they're going to think I bumped him on his head for his money. Well, I have no money. I'm going to need to take his $700.
And the scene itself is so weird. The guy is asleep in the car and he opens the door and the guy falls out and hits his head on a rock. Right? Like very conveniently. And it's the way it's staged is really odd. And so then you start thinking, well, this guy, maybe he just picked up a rock and hit this guy on the head. And this is his version of events.
Right. I mean, it's got, it's unfortunate that I couldn't get, because my wife and my sons were away for half the week last week. It was school vacation. And so I had time at night to watch things that she wouldn't be interested in.
Right.
But I went through a whole bunch. I was going to watch Detour because you said you saw that. And then I got taken on a different journey, which we can talk about in a second. But I'm mad that I didn't get to finish. I got a detour from watching Detour.
You've got to finish it. Yeah. So there's another scene. This won't give it away, but there's another scene that when I was watching it, I was like, this is so ridiculous. I can't believe it. And then the idea that it's from his point of view explains everything. And so I don't know if that's actually what's going on, but it's set up that way, right? He's in the diner at the beginning and the whole story is in flashback. And so it's his version of events.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons this has sort of become a cult film is yes, it's hokey, it's cheesy, it's laughable, but it has this other weird angle to it where you can't quite figure out, did they actually mean to stage that so weird? Or
well, that's the thing is 1945, movies were primarily just made by the major studios.
Yes.
But there were these little rinky-dink outfits, right? This is where Ed Wood came out of that, where there was these tiny little outlets that were making films, and they were just, you know, booking them. Like, you know, look at William Castle Sr.
Oh, yeah.
He'd make these films, and then he would travel with the prints, and they would show them in towns just to make some bucks. And that's basically what the director, I can't remember his name, but...
Edgar G. Ulmer.
Yeah, he did that. He made all of these movies, and he didn't go to a big Hollywood studio. He just worked for the same shitty studio.
Well, yeah, and it's a really interesting way to make movies, I feel like. You know, you're not even doing two or three takes half the time.
And I had heard about this film, honestly, leading up to Criterion launching.
Yeah.
They allowed people who subscribed early that they would get to see if they wanted to watch on their computer. It's because it wasn't streaming on... Right. On Roku or anything yet. They were doing a movie a week, and one of the films was Detour.
And it's also on Amazon Prime, right?
And well, yeah, I don't know what the print looks like, if it's the same print or what, but
Okay, well,
because Amazon Prime lately, they've been putting all sorts of weird crap on there,
yeah.
And the prints are somebody's like VHS tape or something.
Okay, well, I haven't checked it out on Amazon, but the print on Criterion is fantastic. It was restored.
Well, it's through this, did you read that the opening there about the type of restoration that they had to do? It was amazing.
Major restoration, yeah. And
like they had to get one print that was good, but it had subtitles on it, and they had to use a different print as reference, and then they used computers to remove it.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Really incredible restoration. And, you know, it's interesting. Like when I first saw it, I thought, when I saw that opening title card about the restoration, I thought, why restore this movie? Right. Like, what is it about this one that sort of stands out for people? And after watching it, I understand why. I get it.
Oh, it's got all this pulpy dialogue.
Yes.
I mean, I can't recall them right off the bat, but like the guy who picks him up originally, when they go to the diner and he's just saying this, he goes to the lady, she's like, "You forgot your change." He's like, "You keep it. I'll be waiting for you out back." He gives her a nice friendly wink. And it's just, there's so many funny things, the way that these people talk. And it's just a lot of fun.
we're gonna have to talk about it again briefly after you watch the rest of it, because...
Oh, it'll be watched by the next episode.
Okay, because her performance is astounding.
I'm getting to it. I'm going to get to it. So I'm glad you saw that, because I don't think it would have made it to see it if you hadn't said you saw it.
Yeah, and I recommend this film to people that, well, if your noir education is not complete without this film.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. All right, so, you know, we're lovers of film. And why I was so happy that the Criterion Channel came back is it affords me the opportunity to check out films that, I didn't know existed. And it just keeps increasing my film knowledge to know that these little nuggets.
Yeah, I didn't know about this movie before. And,
you know, I'm always looking to see something I never saw before.
Exactly, and especially if it's something that... I don't know. I mean, the thing with the restoration is, right, this movie has clicked with other people, and they're now sharing it. It was financed by George Lucas, right? So
his institute, helped the restoration.
They helped the restoration. And so clearly this movie has caught on with people. They care about it. They think it's worth showing. And that's great when people dig these things up and restore them and give them to us.
Yeah. So, again, I've only seen the first half, but it's a very short movie. So, I mean, literally in an afternoon or I could be done. So I didn't get to see all of it, but I'm already recommending it because it's just so great.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm going to rattle off a title that I also saw. We don't need to spend any time really talking about it, but it was a big hit this past fall.
Oh.
And there was even some insane talk about this film maybe making the cut of the Best Picture nominations.
Uh-huh.
And so when a movie is a box office success and it's part of the conversation...
You kind of got to see it.
Well, yeah, I want to see it when it comes on. It was on HBO, so I watch it. Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, you saw that.
It is pretty horrible.
Really?
Oh, it's terrible. I just, it's really that sorry, it's that stupid kind of romantic fantasy movie that I'm just not into. And I don't care what nationality they are. It's the crazy rich part that really gets me. I'm just not interested in seeing insanely rich people and their problems and behaviors.
Right. So, okay. But aside from that, is the movie, like, competent?
not really. My biggest problem, and I don't remember names. I'm sorry. Right. Was it just honestly, I've already forgotten about the movie, and I saw it maybe a week and a half ago. Is the main actress? I just didn't think she was very good because she is not supposed to be rich, and she's met this guy in New York, and she doesn't know he's super wealthy.
Uh-huh.
And we're not talking just super. We're talking mega wealthy
private jet kind of thing.
Well, sort of, but yeah. he's going over for like a best friend's wedding. It's all part of this family thing, and she accompanies him. And as soon as they get on the plane, like, they're in this like first class suite where like a special cabin room, and they get to like pull down beds and stuff. But her reaction to this, to me, should have been like shock and awe,
right?
And then even the first half of her journey, when they go over to the family, she should have just been like, oh my God. And I didn't feel the way she acted made any sense.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And I just didn't really care. There was a few laughs. It was certainly watchable,
it's basically a fairy tale type romance.
Yeah. You know what? Honestly, in years past, when this is a popular book, this is what Hollywood would have done. There would have been no shot of an Asian director getting a chance to make this film. It would have been Gary Marshall.
You're right.
And I'm laughing because that's what it felt like. It felt like a Gary Marshall movie.
Okay, so it's like Pretty Woman.
It was kind of like that.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, to me, I think it was great that there was an all-Asian-focused story, all-Asian-focused cast. Besides that, there was a few laughs, and it was just not a story for me.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I saw every step that was going to happen in the movie.
Right. Yeah. I have not been excited to, it's been sort of on my list somewhere, but.
One of us had to bite the bullet and see it, and it was me. And again, it was fine. I got through it. But I felt like it was important that I told you I saw it, so that if you were on the fence, now you don't have to waste your time.
Although this does make me kind of curious, oddly.
Well, we could talk about it again just to get your reaction if you do see it. Again, I don't know what kind of like fantasy love stories that your wife may or may not enjoy, but maybe she'd like this, and then we could talk about it.
Yeah. No, she likes things that are a little darker, maybe.
This is not.
Yeah.
This is light as a feather. What else do you got for me?
Okay. I saw, I don't know if you've seen this, but I saw a movie called Singing in the Rain.
Oh, I hope Kate is listening at some point. After all these years and Stanley Donen's death, you saw Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, I had to, right? Because you'd been giving me so much grief about it.
Yeah, not that it's because it's one of my favorite movies or anything. It's just, it's like one of those films that, how could you have not seen it?
Yeah, I just, not the kind of thing my parents are into. So I didn't see it as a kid. And then
tell me about, what are your thoughts?
I watched it with my kids.
Yeah.
They loved it. And
okay.
And so did I. I was really surprised by it. So all I knew was like the one sentence description, right?
Right.
I mean, I knew who was in it. I knew it's a musical. I knew some of the songs, like the Make 'em Laugh song.
It's one of those movies that, like, just when I first saw it as a kid, it was on in the background and I couldn't get into it. It's like, oh, what is this?
Yeah.
You have to be forced to watch it from beginning to end. And then it surprises you because I was like, I didn't know what the story was going to be.
Exactly. I didn't know that's what the story was going to be. And I was totally surprised by the story. And I don't know. I have so many thoughts on it. But one is that it's one of the best movies about movies and about Hollywood.
Yes. Yes.
And I didn't expect it. I guess, based on the description, I was expecting a more romanticized version of early Hollywood. And I was expecting something more along the line, like a more sincere kind of thing, like Easter Parade, which is a movie I like. But and it's not that Singing in the Rain is insincere. It's that it's knowing and it's knowing about Hollywood and even has a little bit of darkness to its satire. So it's much smarter satire. I wasn't expecting satire. Yeah, it's really smart. I mean, the other, I love just at the beginning when they're introducing the movie stars coming down the red carpet. And
oh, it's so great.
It's so, but the performances of the are so over the top and crazy and satirical that I was immediately sucked into the movie by those.
Yeah, and you don't know at the beginning that he and the other character, Lena Lamont, hate each other.
Right, you don't know that at the beginning, and he tells this whole...
You don't know what her voice is like. And...
yeah, when she first speaks, it's this great moment. So it really... I just loved it. I thought it's absolutely one of the best movies about movies.
Well, there's also these little things that you might not even know if you don't know the backstory.
Right.
There's all these like things that they do because there's this whole thing about the about dubbing, right?
Yes.
And that they have to dub Lena Lamont's voice. But what you might not realize is when they dub the voice all serious and it's supposed to be Kathy Sheldon, which is, you know, Debbie Reynolds. The voice that you hear is actually the actress of Lena Lamont in her real voice.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yes, she actually doesn't sound like that, but that performance is so great. For a year, and that's why it's like hard because I have all these, like, my whole life has been Lena Lamont jokes and you've never seen it. Nobody makes a fool of Lena Lamont.
Well, now I've seen, and I guess I would have to say I recommend this movie.
Great. That's good.
And one other thought on this is Gene Kelly is astounding.
Yes. I mean, but when you see the dancing, like you,
that's
once
what I'm getting
you, at. Once you get you brought into it, you watch the moves and you realize he choreographed the things himself.
Yes. And I can't remember the name of his friend there. Cosmo is the character name. I can't remember the actor. But the two of them, when they're doing routines together, are amazing. But Gene Kelly, it just made me think, we don't have somebody like this now who's a song. I mean, part of it is musicals aren't the thing they used to be, but like a song and dance actor.
Yeah, because like Jimmy Cagney was a song and dance actor, and
Fred Astaire.
You know, Fred Astaire. Yeah, that's like a lost thing.
It's a lost thing. Yeah, these song and dance actors. And just the level of talent that you see with Gene Kelly. And another thing that ties into this that I think is really important is watching this movie, a lot of the dance numbers and dance routines are done in not one take, but it's a wide shot where you see the whole body and it doesn't cut. For a long
time. Of course, back then, right? So that's the greatness of a combination of Gene Kelly and Stanley Donen. They knew how to shoot these big numbers.
Well, they also just let the person dance and sing and not do a bunch of editing of footwork or, you know, when they spin, cut in for a close-up or a shot of the face. There's no editing. And so as a result, you're seeing a full performance of somebody really doing this on the day. I think the only modern musical that's done that to that level is La La Land.
Well, you know, it's funny is that you take it for granted, right? It looks like all one take, but what you may again, I know a lot about this film and the history.
Well, I know it's not all one take, but the shots are really long.
But like, you know, the make 'em laugh sequence?
Yeah.
They filmed that like for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And at the end, you know, because I mean, back then everybody like smoked and that actor like was a heavy smoker. He was in the hospital recuperating for a couple of weeks because of the exhaustion.
Wow.
And also when they did the Good Morning routine, Debbie Reynolds also, she had to recuperate for a week of exhaustion because the level of performance, doing things over and over again to get it right for those magical long takes, it's, you know, it's a lot of hard work. Well, today, everything is chop, 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 edit, edit, edit.
Exactly. And without all that, you have got, those takes are astounding. I mean, yeah, so it's worth watching just for, like, for no other reason, just that. You get to see these incredible, incredibly choreographed, danced routines in a long shot.
I think that's why this movie, it's a staple that young or old, you're never too, well, you just proved it, you're never too old to to watch this film.
Yeah, it's the movie is infectious. It really, I totally get it. I understand why it's a classic. Watching it is a joyful experience.
Well, I'm glad you finally watched it.
And my kids loved it too.
Well, that's great too, because, well, my littlest hasn't seen it, but my oldest went, we went to the theater several years ago. He was pretty young when he saw it, and he enjoyed it.
Yeah.
The one sequence I always worry about for young kids, and it's still, it is, I've seen this movie scores of times, and it's still not my favorite sequence, is the long super dream sequence.
Right.
It's a little bit slower.
Yeah.
Which is funny because then the payoff is that when he's finished describing it, they're all kind of like, yeah, that's going to be too long. We're not going to put that in the movie.
Yeah, so it's a good flick. I give it I give it my recommendation. Singing in the Rain, actually a good movie.
Teal endorsement. All right. I'm trying to think. You know, I rewatched several things, some of it on Prime, some things on Criterion, which, by the way, so you got the Criterion channel now,
yes.
Right? So what are your thoughts? Because I had it when it was Filmstruck, and it was a little bit more of a robust experience. And so I'm not saying disappointed. I kind of know it would be a slow start, but there's some things that are missing that I'm hoping they get solved because they're a kind of little annoyances for me.
Basically, I want to be able to search by genre and director and things like that. I want to be able to click on a director's name and see their other films.
This is what the site was. And I've heard, I read something, and I don't know why it hasn't shown up yet. And I'm hoping that that comes in the next wave.
The site actually has more stuff on it now than it did at first. It just hasn't reached the app yet.
Yeah, because it's that's a little annoying. Because honestly, they have this big collection, but the way it is currently on the app, it feels small.
It feels very small. And then, you know, you start digging around in it, and it's, oh, what's this doing here?
Exactly. We have to dig, and I don't want to dig. I mean, my preference would be that I could search very easily from A to Z every title that they've got.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it. They don't want to put everything on their library. Some films they don't have the rights to show. They had the rights to, you know, to do them as a Blu-ray DVD, but they don't have the rights to show them yet. And, you know, they want people to keep coming back, and they're going to add new things. And I'm pretty confident that they are, because they've got licensing agreements with a lot of studios.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm patient. And meanwhile, it's not like I haven't had things to watch. They're just not necessarily what I'm dying to watch.
Yeah. Well, I stumbled on a movie. Well, I didn't stumble. I was searching around in Criterion, and I just did a search by date.
Yep.
To see what their most recent stuff was, and I found a movie I wanted to see doing that I wouldn't have found otherwise.
Oh, is this the one you told me about?
Yes.
The Lure?
The Lure.
And don't, because I am going to see this, and now I'm probably going to see it sooner than later now that you've seen it, but tell me, was it worth seeing?
I'll give you the one sentence description of the movie first. It is.
No, I've seen the preview, so.
well, just, you know, for our listeners, this comes from Poland. I think it's 2017. This is a musical, horror, comedy, romance, mermaid movie.
You know, your basic average and Polish horror seafood movie.
It's a musical. It features mermaids. A very interesting take on mermaids, but it also sort of has, in a way, this, I don't think will ruin anything, in a way it's a typical mermaid story.
Yeah, no, I know they lure men into their
right, but in terms of like, you know, it's a question about whether they're going to live on land or not, right? Are you
okay? Yeah,
the same as the Little Mermaid, right? Are you going to get legs and fall in love, you know, that sort of stuff. So it's sort of got a sort of typical mermaid fairy tale underlying thing, and then on top of that, it's about these these sisters, these mermaids who come onto land and get a job singing in a nightclub and sort of become stars. And then, so there's all these songs and everything, and then there's conflict between the sisters. And so I guess my take on this movie is I really wanted to love it.
Uh-oh.
And I could see how somebody could love it.
But you didn't love it.
I was disappointed.
Should I watch it?
You should watch it. My problem with it is that there are some holes in the script.
Hmm.
And just some basic little things like it doesn't properly set up a couple of characters are not really introduced. And so then they're just sort of part of the movie. But you're like, wait, what's the relationship to them? And so just some basic sort of facts on the ground were not really established or set up very well. I don't know. Maybe I'm being nitpicky. I think another problem I had, and this is not a problem with the movie, it's my problem, is that I think the songs lose something in translation.
Yeah, that depending, I mean, if it's not, maybe if it's like a French movie is one thing, but I do have an issue with foreign language films when they're singing songs that are not like based on like rock music or something. Usually what the translation words, it's like, how is that even a singing song that anybody would enjoy? It is hard, I think, as an American to grasp that.
So. And because of that, it's hard to get caught up in the songs because you're reading the subtitles the whole time. I mean, I'm good at reading subtitles. Everyone is. But, you know, I just didn't get quite as caught up in the songs as I might have otherwise. And I think if I had been more caught up in those, I would have liked the movie a lot more. It's not a bad movie. It definitely needs to be seen by, well, you.
My wife really wants to see it. We had it in our queue the last time. We never got to it. So I will, when we have time, we'll watch it.
And it has one in particular that I'm thinking of, but it has a few really amazing sequences. It really has some high points, this movie. It's just, as a whole, I felt like it stumbled over itself a little too much for me to unabashedly love it. But I can understand why somebody would unabashedly love it.
Okay, well, I think it's sort of a hey, take a look. It's on Criterion. If you got the channel, you might as well watch it.
You might as well take a look. Yeah, it's there's certainly no other movie like it.
Got it.
And the performances are good. I think you're gonna have a problem with the cinematography.
Well, I've seen the preview. I know what I'm getting into when I look at it. So, okay, we're gonna cut that one short till we
both
see it. But I will see it, not maybe by the next episode, but hopefully by the one afterwards. On Criterion, I had been waiting because we talked about it several episodes ago. I got to rewatch Bugsy Malone.
Oh,
I don't really want to spend too much time on that. It's a weird one for sure. And it's funny, even as a kid, the problems I had with the movie, they stay true to as an adult. It's just weird. It's not so weird to see kids performing as adults and gangsters and that whole setting. That's kind of interesting. It's not even that weird, the whole thing with, it's called the splurge guns, where it's shooting some form of
whipped cream
paste. And that the way it's edited, it's kind of making the assumption that that kills you, except at the end where they kind of let you off the hook and everybody's living and having a fun time with a pie fight. But the problem was then, and it's a huge mistake, and then I had to do some reading of it, and Alan Parker agrees that it was a mistake and that it was something that, due to the budget and the timing, even as they kind of knew this was not the right way to go, they couldn't fix it. Is that they did not have the kid actors sing.
Right.
They had adults, and it just is a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Had they had the kids sing the songs, the movie would have been amazing.
Yeah. As it is, it's a, I guess I would call it a worthwhile curiosity.
It is definitely a worthwhile curiosity. It has a huge following now.
Yeah.
A lot of people really like it. I'm not going to go there and say that I'm one of those people, but it's an interesting film, and that's what Criterion's all about, is giving you an offering of things that you may not have really been able to catch up on.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, my kids love this movie.
You said that, but okay.
Yeah, they love it because it's just kids.
My son, my youngest, he was interested in watching it, and he watched 15 minutes, and he just said, I can't take any more of this, and he left. He couldn't handle it. It was too weird. I think it was when he was hearing adult voices come right out of the kids in the songs. It's just weird.
It is weird. Yeah, it's really problematic, especially, oh, and it would be such a great song, that the kid who was cleaning up the nightclub.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's exactly, these are great moments.
Yeah.
And you want to hear them sing, or, you know, they would have had to hire actors, I guess, could have sing, but it feels weird. It's definitely kind of how the movies were made back then.
I think the reason my kids like it is because they can imagine themselves being in the movie as actors.
And that, you know, I think if I had, when I first saw this as a kid, had I been maybe a couple years younger, I think I would have had that same reaction where when you're a kid, you have a fantasy of being an adult, but you can't picture yourself right as an adult. So you picture yourself as a kid, but as a kid adult. You know what I mean?
Well, and but also just the fantasy of being in a movie, being an actor. And then it's suddenly like the whole movie is just kids. It's made for kids. It's a world without grownups. That's kind of just a fun concept for a kid to think about.
I agree. All right, I'm not going to talk about Bugsy Malone anymore.
Yeah.
Because we have too many other movies and we have too little time. I do want to talk. I mean, you said you didn't see a lot. So have you really seen, is that about all you saw?
No, there's one more.
Okay. Well, let's
see. And we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, because that's the one that we both saw, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, let me just go on. There's a couple of, like I said, I've sampled a bunch of things on Criterion, and I haven't finished them, so I don't want to talk about them.
Right.
But there's one that caught my interest because it was another that Criterion was promoting prior to the release.
Right, along with Detour.
Yeah, and I'm a guy who likes cinema verite.
Yes.
Which sounds very obnoxious to say that, but what I like is, but it's sort of like when I saw the Cassavetes film Woman on the Influence,
right.
It's these films that they're typically, you feel like the filmmakers just had to make a movie, they got out the 16 millimeter camera, and they got a small intimate cast and crew, and they were sort of striving to tell a story that also felt like it was set almost documentary like
yes, and a real focus on the actors and the performances.
Yeah. And so there's this, she was a small actress. I mean, when I say small, she only had a few roles. And she died way too early. She died of cancer in the late 70s before she could ever really make another film. She made one movie. And she was so compelled that she decided to make this. She wanted, I think, a role that she wasn't getting offered, or nobody right was. They weren't making any stories about a character like this. So the actress's name was Barbara Loden. Mm-hmm. She was married to Eliza Kazan.
Right. Okay.
And she was in Splendor in the Grass, I believe.
Okay.
She had a side role. So at any rate, there's this movie called Wanda that she wrote and directed and starred in.
Okay.
And it is a weird... I don't know if it was shot on 16 millimeter or what, but it's, you know, it's Academy ratio.
Right.
It's pretty grainy. They've done a great restoration work. I'm sure that the prints that have existed for years, if anybody even saw this movie, it was probably really hard to, like, watch it. And it's just about a woman on the edge of life. She just barely functional. She has kids and a husband, and she kind of goes out and drinks, and she doesn't take care of the family, and she basically abandons the husband and kids, and is kind of wandering aimlessly in Pennsylvania. And she runs into kind of a series of bad men that just so she could get like a meal and stuff.
Right.
And she gets treated really lousy. And you're seeing kind of like a slice of life because there's no sets. Everything is shot. Like if it's in a hotel room, it's shot in a hotel room.
Right.
If it's in a diner, so you're getting this awesome look at what, like, it was probably shot in 1969.
Right.
It really looked on the streets. I'm always fascinated at something that captures what the real look of America was. But through a weird circumstance, she goes into a bar late at night, and she's looking for a drink. And there's this really weird dude behind the bar. And he's like, "Yeah, we're closed. Get out." And she's like, "But I just want a drink." He starts serving her. And then they pan down, and there's a bartender that's tied up and gagged.
Oh.
Under the, and this guy is a robber.
Right.
And she ends up hooking up, but doesn't know he's a robber, right? And this guy is plays a character. He's called Mr. Dennis.
So this is almost like a noir-type plot.
It is almost like a noir, but yet it's done in this weird sort of it's like right. Cassavetes.
Verite and, noir.
And this guy is an actor. He was a character actor named Michael Higgins. And he's in The Conversation, and he's in a bunch of other things. Because I recognized him. I was like, I know this guy. But his character, Mr. Dennis, is very real, a real monster in a way you don't see on films. And it just gets very interesting. And he kind of pulls her into his world, and he's abusive, and he's just very sinister. And it's just, there's a lot of dynamic acting going on. And I think that it's something that you would enjoy.
I have got to see this. No, based on what you're saying, this is moves high up on my list.
I'm not going to tell you anything else about it other than I was mesmerized. Once this guy came on the scene, I will never forget Mr. Dennis.
Okay.
And it's just great to know that there's this character in this movie. And I think that this has not even been discovered the way even Detour had been.
Right.
It didn't have much of an opening. And I watched, they have like on Criterion, you can watch these little segments.
Right.
There's this 13-minute interview that she did promoting the movie on the Dick Cavett Show.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't watch all of it. I watched parts. But what you're watching, this mother effer, Dick Cavett, is so obnoxious and condescending to women.
Oh, man.
Though you have to, it's a real microcosm of what he I don't think he even realizes when he's saying the things to her, that it's exactly why she had to make this movie, because the industry is filled with assholes like him.
Wow.
And you have to watch it, and having her sort of having to contain herself from just ripping him because of just awful, obnoxious things he says to her in this interview. Sort of like, yeah, there's not a lot of women doing in movies. They don't really get parts and all this. It just,
man.
It's unbelievable. So you got to watch that after you see the movie.
Definitely watching that.
Okay.
Yeah, I really want to see this. This sounds right up my alley.
Yeah.
So what year is it? 1970.
1970, Wanda, okay. By Barbara Loden. And it's sad is that I guess Eliza Kazan was also very commanding over her. And he got a little jealous that she was kind of making, because he didn't do a lot in the 70s.
Right.
And I think he kind of kept her from really making a lot of other films. And before she could ever get to making another one, I think she got breast cancer and she died like in 1978. And she was only in their maybe late 40s at the time.
Wow. Okay. Well, quite a story.
Yeah. So, I want to just throw out a few things real fast because we don't need to talk about them.
Yeah.
Because I want to spend a few minutes talking about that movie we both saw.
Right. That we've been avoiding this whole time.
Well, no, because it's a good ender. I saw on Hulu this film Colossal.
I have not seen it.
It's directed by Nacho Vigalondo. And the reason I mention that name is he directed a film that you mentioned many episodes ago, and it's also on Hulu, so now I'm going to check that out, even if it's terrible, is Time Crimes.
Oh, yeah.
And this film has a fantasy element in it as well, and it's interesting for a time, and then it goes way downhill. And it's got Anne Hathaway.
Okay.
She plays kind of like a borderline alcoholic who goes back to her hometown, and she gets mixed up with some local friends from high school. And long story short, she discovers that she has some kind of link to a monster that is attacking South Korea.
That sounds kind of awesome.
It does for a while. And then it's interesting the figuring out exactly how she's doing it, what's the connection. Unfortunately, then the third act kicks in, and it's just terrible.
Really?
And it was so bad that my wife and I, who were both kind of enjoying the film, I think by the end of it, it made it hard for us to recommend the movie.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yep. So I saw that, so you may want to check that out.
I might want to check that out. Yeah, you should definitely check out Time Crimes.
Well, that's why I'm going to, because you know what? There's not, I want to say a time travel element, but there's that same sort of playing with other dimensions and conventions at play. So, then I've seen a few films that I've rewatched movies, some on Prime that Bill from Queens asked me to see a film, and I did. It is Monty Hellman's Cockfighter.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a hard movie in today's day and age to watch because at the time, cockfighting was not illegal in all states. And what they're showing is actual cockfighting in the movie.
And wow. Okay.
It is just, it's a weird little hour and a half low budget time capsule, very grainy. And another thing that's weird is Prime sometimes has like three copies of the same movie.
Okay.
And they had two copies that must have been off of somebody's beta tapes.
Right.
And I'm not talking Betamax, but the other, the thicker format of beta.
Right.
3/4-inch beta, I don't know. And then there was another that was actually the 185 version. I watched that. You know, it's maybe if we're doing a Monty Hellman program, we can talk about that. But I saw it, and I can't say I didn't, completely, I had an okay time, but it was hard to watch.
I'm curious, where's it available? It's on Hulu?
No, Prime.
Oh, it's on Prime. Okay, I think I'll probably check it out.
Yeah, just look for the right copy. You're going to have to click a few copies, DK, because I was like, this can't all be, because I'm not going to watch it if it's like a, old TV copy, but there was one that was a full screen.
There's a decent one, okay. Yeah, I just looked it up, and it's written by Charles Williford. Who was a noir crime novelist.
It's gritty.
And he also wrote the book Miami Blues.
Oh, well, I think he wrote a book called Cockfighter.
Yes, he did.
That's what it's also, so I think it's based on this book.
Yeah, it's based on his book, but he also wrote the screenplay, yeah.
And it's got Warren Oates, and Warren Oates is a really interesting actor.
Warren Oates is, frequently the subject of film festivals.
You didn't see this movie, right?
No.
Right. All right. Well, I mean, I will just say that through most of the film, he has a he doesn't say anything.
Oh, interesting.
He has a narration. There's a detour tie-in. But so there's some fascinating things, and there's a lot of interesting early performances that pop up. A great cameo from very young Steve Railsback.
Oh, interesting.
And he may have been only a teenager at the time, and he plays a very weird, funny character, Ed Begley Jr.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's definitely a weird movie. Maybe it's like you put it on, like I did. It was late at night, and nobody else around your family is home to watch it. that's what I recommend. So, anyways, there's all those things, and I don't want to talk about the – this is the last – I'm going to last mention, and then we're jumping into the final film, is there's not time enough to talk about this, and we're going to have to carve out a separate when we've seen all three films. But I was sort of given a challenge another listener, Gerardo, and he kind of made some – he's been really touting the films by this director, S. Craig Zahler, and just recently released a, view-on-demand film, Dragged Across Concrete.
Yes.
That's been getting a lot of notice. Some people love it. Some people hate it. It's very controversial.
I have seen it.
I know you have. And I have not. But then he made two other films before that, Brawl and Cell Block 99, with Vince Vaughn, who's also in Dragged Across Concrete, and then Bone Tomahawk from a few years ago, which had Kurt Russell in it. And that's a Western. And these films are starting to get a reputation.
Yes.
And mostly because they feature a certain, I guess it's he's starting to develop a style.
Yeah.
It's very slow. They kind of are a little bit too long, these movies, mm-hmm. and they have a very slow build first half.
Yes.
And then they go way into kind of Crazyville in the second half.
Yeah, that's Dragged Across Concrete pretty much. He does a weird thing in Dragged Across Concrete where the actors don't talk over each other or interrupt each other. And so,
unlike us.
Well, no, but in most movies,
we're not going to be in an S. Craig Zahler movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like say a line without any, it just feels very theatrical, actually.
Yeah, and then you're going to find the same thing when you watch the other two movies. But the reason is that I kind of know, I've known about these films, and yeah. It's not that I wasn't motivated to watch them. Because I'm not like, oh, great, there's going to be some over-the-top violence. I don't know what it is, but that's what I want to see. But then he wrote a post that it was a total troll
post. It was a troll post, yep.
And he was like, well, how am I going to get people to watch this? Oh, I know. I'm going to say that this guy is greater than Quentin Tarantino. And I was struck by that only because I'm like, well, why is he making that particular, like, why is this director being thrown into the mix in the first place? Like, that's such a weird thing to compare directors anyway.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, this guy's made three movies and he's saying he's greater than Quentin Tarantino. Now he has trolled me and he's trapped me. I need to now see what the hell.
He got you.
And I knew the whole time. I'm like, I know he's joking. Like, I don't know, but this guy's only made three movies and the other guy's made, the ninth film is coming out this summer. So I'm like, you can't compare that. And I'm like, why? So I had to see these films for myself. I haven't seen Dragged Across Concrete, but I saw the other two.
Should we wait until I've seen the other two?
We're not going to talk about it. I'm talking about it, but I'm not going to talk about those films. All I'm going to say is that when I watched those movies, had he not said Quentin Tarantino, the last person that would have popped into my head when I watched these films was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of Tarantino, but he's doing more over the top or something.
Right.
Like, he wouldn't have popped into my brain, which is really why he threw that name there, I think, was just to be provocative, to get me to watch these movies, because there's no other way I would have rushed to see them, but I felt like I had to just to prove him wrong. And then, of course, I knew he just conned me, because I'm like, this is not even the same ballpark. They're just different movies.
Yeah, it's totally different kind of thing. He reminds me a little to me, these are exploitation movies.
Well, they are. And of course, they're today's exploitation movies. So they don't have the charm of being shot on, like, you know, minimal stock. And unfortunately, now we're starting to talk about them a little bit. But my biggest problem is I've read some interviews, right? And the guy justifies everything.
Yeah.
But the problem is if he was on like the kind of budgets that they had back in the 70s and 80s, he wouldn't have had the footage available to shoot these overlongs, and he would have had to get more creative. And yeah, I know people, he has a style and he likes a slow build, but I don't think the build's that good. And you have to go through some real cinematic process.
Yeah.
There's a reason why certain films should be only a certain length, because they can be better. And I think that the movies that I watched could have been better had they been rewritten before they were shot, and he wasn't so overindulgent with dialogue that he thought was great, but to me was just ridiculous.
Again, going back to the actors speaking over each other, if
if they were doing that, it would have saved some time.
No, the scenes would be half the length.
Yeah, I mean, and yet I wasn't saying it was bored, but like I felt like with the with the Cell Block one.
Yeah.
There was a lot of mistakes, because he spent a lot of time on one thing to try to build up a relationship, and then he didn't spend enough time on the other thing that was going to fuel the second half of the movie. But again, you haven't seen it, but it's interesting. I think that when we do see all these films, we could bring Mandy back into the discussion.
Right.
Because it kind of has that same vein of like taking things up to an extreme notch. And my theory is the reason he does that is because he doesn't have a good directorial style, and that he knows by doing these over-the-top violent things, these scenes are what the people who go see these types of movies, they're going to come back talking about and tell their friends about. If he didn't have the extreme violence that is like something that you've never seen on film before, there'd be no reason to talk about the guy.
I would say that Dragged Across...
It's a marketing ploy.
Dragged Across Concrete is not probably as violent as Cell Block.
Wait till you see that movie.
I'm looking forward to it. But his cinematography is kind of rough. But again, they're exploitation movies. Oh, that's what I was going to say, is that Dragged Across Concrete, I think, is 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
Yeah, that's the longest. The other ones are both about 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yeah, so it's about 2 hours and 45 minutes long, and it made me think of Detour at an hour and 9 minutes.
Right, the extremes. And I sort of get it, is that today you know, you can shoot a longer story because you're not worried about film, because it's not just shooting the film, which costs money. It's the processing of it. It's the work prints. I mean, it all just adds up. So I think, you know, and today, you know, people are sitting down watching 8-part shows on TV.
Exactly. So what's a 2-hour and 45-minute movie? They'll probably watch it over 2 nights.
But yeah, I mean, again, it's not necessarily, I have no problem with long lengths if it makes sense to have the long lengths. And if I can sit and watch those two films that I did and really say honestly, you know what, there was a good half an hour that needed to be taken out. And then there's actually some stuff that should have been rewritten so that it could have been a smoother, there's just no need.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, but he's allowed to make the movies he wants to make.
And he is a unique individual voice.
Well, he's starting to become, you know, again, that was my other problem with this statement that Gerardo made, is that that's the whole point, is that 3 films, right, is not enough. Now, I'm going to make it clear to what I'm saying about this, is that there's like all these other big directors, and I had said that I hadn't seen a Kurosawa movie before.
Right.
Now I have seen 3, okay, because I saw Rashomon not too long ago. And I feel like I've seen 3 Kurosawa films. However, I don't feel like I can really speak to how good he is or style until I've seen a minimum of 5 of his movies.
Yeah.
I think 5 of any director, if I haven't seen 5 of their films, I can't really talk. I can talk about the individual movies.
Right. But it's hard to make an assessment of the director as a whole without a few more movies.
Yeah. So Zoller's made 3 films.
Yeah.
And I don't know, so I haven't seen the last one, so I don't know if there's an evolution, but it sounds like 2 hours and 45 minutes, he's going into the wrong direction. He's going the longer route. You know, but he might be building a little nest. I think he's got to drop there's a cinematographer, Ben Bakshi, and I don't know if he's related at all to Ralph Bakshi. I have no idea. I couldn't find any details, but he's got to drop that guy. Because I know that it's low budget and it's shot digitally, but it's so bad. There's these scenes in Bone Tomahawk that they're shot handheld, and whoever it is was having some kind of an attack because the camera's shaking, you know? And there's stuff that it's like, would it have spent that much time to just stick it on a tripod? Because these are clearly shots that should have been. And then they're also shot in a way, I don't think that the director understands how to shoot things on film or video, whatever, because a lot of times there are these wide shots that look like they're on a soundstage set.
Yes.
And just the angles, it just looks stupid.
Yeah.
And I know there might be for instance, when we're talking about Yorgos Lanthimos, when he's shooting those very like sterile shots that are almost, you know, fish, there's a purpose and he's making you think differently about what you're watching. No, this guy here, he's not doing it. He's winging it. He doesn't know how to place a camera. He thinks it looks good. And then he probably watches a scene and says, oh, this looks awesome.
So
I know that when I watched these films.
So I had some of those same problems with Dragged Across Concrete until the 3rd act.
That's the whole thing. So I was sending responses to Gerardo on Facebook when I had gotten to about halfway, because I thought this movie was horrible and I thought that Vince Vaughn's character, like his acting was terrible. It was going nowhere. I mean, it was. And then literally it took 58 minutes, I think, for finally the second half of the movie to kick in. Which is way too long. It breaks every rule, and I don't think that there was enough justification going on in the first half. But man, I got to tell you, that last hour and 10 minutes flies, and it is just entertaining, but it's very exploitative. I mean, just even from the casting, I mean, the way that like Don Johnson is being cast in a classic canon role. And Don Johnson's in Dragged Across Concrete too, I think.
Yeah, but it's like 1 or 2 scenes.
Well, he's doing that. Now he's got his own stable of little characters. This guy, Fred something, he's got him in all 3 movies. And he's doing that. Jennifer Carpenter's in 2, Vince Vaughn's in 2. So, you know.
And I like Vince Vaughn.
Well, I don't know if I like the person.
I don't know about that. I've enjoyed some Vince Vaughn performances.
Well, Vince Vaughn, when he's given the right dialogue, so like in the first half, he just is not performing well. He's performing like the bad Vince Vaughn.
Right.
The second half, when his character really kicks in, he says things in the way he's able to deliver lines That's really fantastic. I mean, okay. I really liked the second half of that movie, though I will tell you that the violence on display is for shock value, and it really was shocking.
You're right.
And I felt that it was there not because this director, it was there because he wanted to make sure that people were talking about this film afterwards.
Yeah, and I think there's, I didn't find the violence to be that extreme in Drag Across Concrete.
I thought that the violence in Bone Tomahawk, there's not a lot of it. It's very extreme. And I think it was, again, designed to make sure that people remembered the movie.
Right.
But it felt more purposeful than in the Cell Block film.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a moment in Dragged Across Concrete. Well, it's actually a 10-minute sequence. I don't know if it's 10. I didn't time it. But it feels about 10 minutes. And I won't tell you what it is, but it's very powerful. It has some violence, but that's not really the point. It's about the anticipation of violence. It's about that violence might be coming, and you kind of know it's coming. And this sequence has stuck with me since I watched this movie, and I can't get it out of my head.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? So I'm complaining about the guy's cinematography, his framing, his pacing, and yet this guy is creating these movies where after you see them, there are scenes you're thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's got something, right?
He's doing something that is getting under my skin somehow.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, that's what I'm saying. Three movies, right? And now I can watch three movies in pretty quick succession.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see what he's doing and the similarities and stuff. Whereas, you know, he's still building his film resume. So let's see where he goes.
Let's see where he goes. And it may be somewhere interesting.
So anyways, people, so I guess there's more to come when I've seen Dragged Across Concrete, and that could be a while because I'm not paying for it. I'm not going to pay for it.
When you see that, I will watch the other two. We'll do another little S. Craig Zahler thing.
I don't need to refresh my memory of those other. I'll remember them just fine when we get into them. I think you're going to have the same opinion as me. I don't think you're going to be like, I don't think you're going to love those movies.
Well, I mean, you had said initially that like with Dragged Across Concrete, some people love it and some people hate it. I both love it and hate it.
Well, yeah, and I have more to say on these. I think that we can get into like kind of where these films fit in today's political landscape, which is funny is that Bill from Queens, he's actually seen the first two movies.
Yeah.
He has not seen the new one.
Oh, okay.
And I thought that these would have been right up his alley, and it turns out that he's actually was disgusted by them.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with today's political climate. He's concerned about the message of the film.
Right.
And I have my standpoint on these is that I think that he's a director that says, I'm putting these characters and situations out there.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of wrestle with the kind of people these people are and their value systems.
Right.
I'm not leaning either way, and that may be uncomfortable for you. So I actually find that fascinating. That's an aspect of the films so far that I actually like, is the fact that these morally ambiguous characters, and he doesn't give you a side to fall on.
Right, or an easy out for the morals.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, just, you know, I think we're going to be wrapping up, but I just want to let you all know that there was another film that the two of us wanted to talk about. We didn't get to, but it's so much better than any of the films that we talked about today. I mean, Singing in the Rain's great, but I mean, this is a film that I heard about and...
And we both watched it, and we'll talk about it on the next show.
Yeah. Well, I'm giving it a good tease. I'm not going to tell you the film, but I'm just saying it's on Criterion. And it's an award-winning filmmaker. He's only made a few live-action films. But it's a film that I really wasn't sure what I was going to get when I watched it. I kind of roughly knew what it was about.
Hold this. Wait till the next episode.
No, would you?
Okay.
I'm setting it up. I'm going to tell you the movie. I am not going to say what the movie is. I'm just going to say that it floored me. It just knocked my socks off.
Me too.
And I told you about it, and then you were kind of like, should I watch it? I'm like, yeah, you should watch it. So that is going to be the first thing we talk about next episode until we, of course, get sidetracked. don't talk about it, but no, I think we want to talk about it.
We're going to lead with it on the next episode.
Yeah. So anyways, that's something to look forward to. I hope everybody is having a good time, and That's all I've got.
Yeah. And drop us a note. Let us know what you're watching or what you think we should be watching.
But as you point, you just said something. That's the thing is, right? I'm hearing, I heard from Bill from Queens.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, watch Cockfighter. So I watched it. We heard from Gerardo, who basically threw the gauntlet down and said, you need to see these films. And well, you know what? I watched them.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So we
will watch these.
We will listen to our listeners.
Yep. Listen to the listeners. Excellent. All right. Well, and everyone, thank you for tuning in to Stuff We've Seen. If you like what you've been listening to, please make sure to tell a friend. You know, we could, we'd like to have some more listeners. You know, of course, subscribing to us is free. And here's the good news is that if you subscribe, as soon as we post an episode, it's going to go into like your iTunes or wherever you subscribe from. If you don't subscribe and you wait for it to get on to the website, you might be waiting for a few days. Because like the last episode, the Doritos, it didn't get on as soon as it was on available. So, you know, just if subscribe and then you'll always get the stuff. And we're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, or iTunes. And then, you know, if you have to wait, you can catch us and the episodes on StuffWeSeen.com, or you can follow us on Instagram, StuffWeSeenPodcast, or at Twitter at Stuff_VE, or drop us a line at feedback at JimAndTale.com. All right? So stay safe, everyone, and go see some stuff. He's gonna make it. He's gonna take this cockeyed world and shake it. He's gonna show them he's a winner in the end. With a little luck and a little bitty barefoot friend.